Hello, everyone. For those of you who missed the sound of my voice, here's a little video and audio to go along with lectures 26 and 27. So if you want to follow along, this is the third page of lecture 26. We're going to treat the conduction electrons in a metal. And remember, the conduction electrons are essentially free when they're inside the crystal. They can wander around over macroscopic distances, hundreds of miles if the crystal were that large. And if the electrons try to get outside of the crystal, it's very difficult for them to do that. So we're going to use a model, and we'll start with one dimension. Later on, we'll refine it to three dimensions. The model is the infinite square well, which you learned about in your modern physics class and your intro quantum mechanics classes. The square refers to this 90-degree corner in the well. And so in first approximation, we'll say that the well is at zero potential inside, and then it's the energy to get out is very large, and we'll say, well, that's essentially infinite, okay, because that's an easier problem than the finite square well, and a lot easier than these rounded corners. And as a first pass, we'll say the electrons follow the Schrodinger equation. The Schrodinger equation, to remember, is non-relativistic. That's a good approximation. The conduction electrons are not moving very quickly. But it's also a spin zero equation, and that's a problem because the electrons are actually fermions with spin one half. We'll take care of that correction in a second. And then much later, after we get this model up and running, we have to account for the fact that the floor of the potential is not really constant. It has dips at the positive ion cores, and we can account for that periodic potential as well. But first things first. Okay. For the non-relativistic Schrodinger equation, we're going to look for stationary states. These are solutions where the energy eigenvalue E is a constant. And as long as you're looking at that kind of state, as opposed to states of constant momentum or constant X or constant whatever eigenvalue observable you choose, the nice thing about the energy eigenstates is that the time evolution is very simple. The states evolve according to this, the exponential of I times the energy times the time divided by Planck's constant. So because the time evolution is so simple, we can factor that out, and we can look at the time-independent Schrodinger solution psi of x. Well, as I said, this is covered in every intro course, so we'll go kind of quickly. We're going to solve the time-independent Schrodinger equation for potential zero inside the well and infinite outside the well. The solutions are sines and cosines, depending on how you choose the one-dimensional x-axis. The way I've chosen it, one corner of the potential well is at zero, the other corner is at L. And remember, L is a macroscopic distance. It's going to be millimeters or centimeters, not angstroms, not something on the atomic scale. If you make this choice for the x-axis, then the solutions will only be sines, because the wave function psi has to vanish where the potential is infinite on the left side and on the right side of the well. If you make a choice that the origin is in the middle of the well, and so the left side would be at minus L over 2 and the right side at plus L over 2, then you'll get both sines and cosines. It's really the same solution, it just depends on how you label the coordinate axis. Okay, and this is easy to solve. In non-relativistic mechanics, the energy, which in this case is going to be all kinetic energy, is the momentum squared over twice the mass, and in quantum mechanics, h bar times k, the wave vector, is the momentum. So this is p squared over 2m, or if you like, it's 1 half mv squared. Okay, that tells you it's non-relativistic. If you solve for the wave function using the boundary conditions, you can see that the way I've set it up, the b coefficient of the cosine goes away. So as promised, you only have sines. We'll work out the A coefficient in a second. We'll get that by normalizing. But what you find is when you look at the right endpoint, psi of L has to vanish. You don't want to set the coefficient A equal to zero because B is already zero. And if you set A equal to zero as well, then the whole wave function is zero. And that's not normalizable. That's not a solution at all. So the other thing to do is to set the sine of KL equal to zero. And that tells you that the wave number K is quantized. And so I'll label it with an N. K sub n is some integer number of pi's time divided by L, where n is non-zero and positive the way I've set it up. Okay, and because K is related to the wavelength, that tells you the wavelength is also quantized. So these are the solutions. Aside from the time dependence, the time independent solutions are A times the sine of n pi x over L. And this, if you apply the normalization condition that the integral of psi star psi over the well from 0 to L is equal to 1, you'll find that the coefficients are all the square root of 2 over L. Regardless of what this quantum number n is, they all have the same normalization. So we got lucky. And then I gave you a homework assignment to show you that it really doesn't matter if you choose the potential inside to be a constant instead of 0. All that's going to do is change the wave function by a phase. And that phase angle theta is not observable. So you might as well make life easy for yourself and choose the bottom of the well at 0 rather than some other constant. Okay, let's jump to lecture 27. Now, to generalize this from one dimension to three dimensions, it's very easy. The wave functions just multiply by each other. So this prefactor out in front, this is the square root of 2 over whatever the dimension is. So it's the square root of 2 over L times the square root of 2 over W for width, square root of 2 over H for height. And you'll recognize that combination in the denominator, length times width times height, that's just going to be the volume. So it's the square root of 8 over the volume. And then there's a sine in every dimension. There's a sine for the x dimension with a quantum number. Now I have to label that n sub x because there are different ones. For the y direction, n sub y, and in the z direction, n sub z. They're all independent, and none of them are zero. They all range from 1 to infinity. The energy eigenvalues simply add, and so there's a prefactor in front of all of them that I've taken out, and then the things that change are nx squared over l squared, and y squared over w squared, and z squared over h squared. So it's just the sum of those three. Here I've graphed in one dimension, these are the lowest lying states, the bottom one is the ground state, this is the first excited state. There's an infinite number, and it's important to know that the energies go up like the square of the quantum number. They're not evenly spaced like they are in the harmonic oscillator. And now we can put in the Pauli exclusion principle, the fact that you can only put one electron in a given state because they're spin 1/2 particles or fermions. This is a view of the bottom of the well. So here's the lowest lying state, and I can put one electron spin up and one electron spin down, and then you're done. That state is filled. Here's the next highest state. Again, one electron spin up and one electron spin down. You can see I've tried to represent that the energy between the states is growing. That gap gets larger and larger as you go up the ladder. But it's like laying bricks. You can only put two in the level, and that level is filled. Then you have to go up to the next level. This is a zoom out. So the left-hand picture is all contained down here in the bottom of the well. And as you get further and further to the top, eventually you will run out of electrons. You will exhaust the number of conduction electrons in the metal, and the energy at which that last electron goes in the well is known as the Fermi energy. This is going to be quite large, as we'll see when we work it out on the next couple of pages. All right, now let me remind you, in reciprocal space, in K-space, there's a relation that tells you the density of states, how many states you have for a given K. And as a reminder, let's go back to lecture 24, which I have sitting over here. And so in three dimensions, the number of states as a function of wave vector K is the volume of a sphere in K space. That volume is 4/3 pi K cubed. And then there's a factor of L over 2 pi that goes along with every dimension. And so if you're in three dimensions, it's L over 2 pi quantity cubed. Now I have to take the derivative of that expression with respect to k. So dn, that's easy to do. Dn dk, bring down the 3, that cancels the 3 in the denominator, and you get 4 pi k squared times this factor of L over 2 pi cubed. And I use that right here. So here's the 4 pi k squared, and this is the, in the denominator, this is 2 pi over L quantity cubed, and I replaced L cubed by V. Where is this 2 coming from? This 2 is because you can have two electron spins in a given state, one spin up and one spin down. You've seen this before. When we did this for phonons, there were 3 polarization states. There was one longitudinal and 2 transverse states, so there's a factor of 3 in front, but now it's going to be a factor of 2 for the electrons. And if you do a little bit of algebra and clean it up, you get this compact expression. All right, now remember that the total number of states, n, is the integral of the density of states, and that's really important. If you, it's really easy to see. If you put in dn dk instead of this notation, d of k, you'll see that the dk's cancel, one in the denominator and one in the numerator, and so you're just integrating dn. So n total is the integral of dn, of course. But now that's easy to do. So if you plug in this expression for d of k into this integral, the final answer is v k at the upper endpoint cubed divided by 3 pi squared. The upper endpoint is the Fermi wave vector. So they don't go all the way to infinity, at least when the crystal is cold. I'll explain that in a minute. We're going to take the approximation that we're close to absolute zero, and so the states are degenerate. All the low states are filled, all the upper states are empty. So in that case, there's a largest wavelength, and the integral goes from zero to k Fermi. And if I just solve this expression for k Fermi, it is the quantity 3 pi squared times the number of states divided by the volume to the 1/3 power. And this n is extensive. So if you give me a bigger crystal with more electrons, the n gets bigger. And of course, the volume gets bigger. But the ratio n over v, the ratio of two extensive quantities, is intensive. And so that's the number density, also known as the concentration. So k Fermi is also an intensive quantity. It doesn't matter how much of the metal you have. Fermi wavelength and the Fermi energy will be the same. And if you want to know what the Fermi energy is, again, because this is non-relativistic quantum mechanics, I take h bar times k, that's the momentum. And so this expression is the momentum squared over 2m, p squared over 2m, non-relativistic kinetic energy. And so here is the Fermi energy written in terms of the concentration. For a real life example, you should plug in numbers and check that this works. For sodium, sodium gives up one electron into the conduction band. All the others are bound tightly to the sodium ion core, so there's one electron per atom. And the concentration is n over v, that is one electron for every primitive cell. But the primitive cell, remember, sodium is body-centered cubic. It's not easy to work with the primitive cell because it's not cubic. And so instead, we work with the non-primitive cubic cell, because the volume is easy to find for a cube. There it is. It's just a naught cubed. But because it's body-centered cubic, there are two atoms in the non-conventional cell. So it's 2 over V, or it's 2 over a naught cubed. And if I plug that in to the expression on the previous page, this one, for the Fermi energy, you can look up the constants and plug them in. Planck's constant squared over twice the mass of the electron times this collection of symbols. You'll have to look up a naught for sodium in the textbook, and I got 3.24 electron volts. Make sure you can get that same answer or something at least close to it. You could also look up the concentration itself. Instead of looking up a cubed, you could look up little n itself in the book, and again, the answer should be close. All right, now something a little bit more complicated. We want to know, how are the states distributed, but not in k? How are the states distributed with respect to energy E? And so there's a change of variable to perform here. This is also called the density of states. And the book uses the symbol D of E. Maybe a little bit better would be to call it this, dN dE, to remind you that the expression is differential. And how do I get there? Well, dN dE is dN dK, but I know that, we just worked it out. dN dK is just D of K. And then I have to multiply that by dK by dE. Okay, well, K squared, because this is non-relativistic quantum mechanics, K squared is twice the mass times the kinetic energy of the electrons divided by H bar squared. And if you take the square root and then take the derivative, it's easy to get this expression and plug it in above. And then I also need D of K, so we have to scroll back a couple of pages. Right here, here's the D of K, VK squared over pi squared. And here's the other piece, the derivative of k with respect to e is this amount. And if you multiply those two together and a little bit of algebra, you will get this. And you find that the density of states with respect to energy goes like the square root of the energy. And so if I plot it, density of states on the vertical axis and energy along the horizontal axis, this is a parabola, but it's tipped over on its side. So this is the square root of E curve. And then there is some maximum energy when all these states are filled, when the temperature is very cold, all the bottom states get filled, and there are only n of them. And so when the area under the curve is equal to n, then the energy cuts off. And again, that energy is E Fermi, the largest energy. Okay, next time I will go through the review of thermodynamics with you. Take care.